5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello and welcome to Tech Talk for another week. It is I, Stephen Scott, back with you once again. I hope you're well. I hope you've had a good week. Now, last week on the show, you might remember we talked about Android and I guess the tools that are available for partially sighted users. Well, this week, we're focusing more on TalkBack and specific blindness technology that is within Android. So looking forward to that conversation. We'll get to our special guest on that in just a moment. But first, let me welcome the team as always. Robin Christofferson's here from AbilityNet. Hello, Robin.
Hello, Stephen.
And I'm delighted to say that Tim Schwartz is back with us as well. How are you, Tim?
I have slept slightly more than last week, and most of my family is okay, although my wife has laryngitis, so that's interesting. Hmm. But yes, definitely better than last week. Thank you.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad you're back with us, Tim. I hope your wife gets better soon. But yes, good to have you back on the show this week. Now, before I welcome our special guest, a couple of things. Firstly, no Andy this week. I know, it's a shame. But no, he couldn't be with us this week because I told him not to. Because I know for a fact we're going to talk this entire hour around Android. Our special guest could talk for years on this topic, so I'm more than certain Andy wouldn't get a word in edgeways this week, so we've given him the week off. However, we will be moving away from Android for just a few moments to, yes, talk about iPhone, but actually a particular feature of the iPhone. We're going to be hearing from Yvonne Brooks today from RNIB's Technology for Life team, who's been researching LiDAR. She's been trying out some of the new features of seeing AI and, of course, the new people detection feature in the iPhone 12 Pro. Hear her review of that coming up here on the show and her views on LiDAR. You can agree or disagree, as always, by emailing techtalk@rnib.org.uk. I am more than certain you'll have plenty to say after this week's programme. So, let's get into it. And yes, we are focusing on Android for most of the show this week, and specialist tech to some degree as well. With us to go through all this, Steve Nutt is here from Computer Room Services. Yes, the voice of Android, or the voice of sense when it comes to Android, I think it's fair to say. Steve Nutt, good to have you with us.
Hello, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's great to have you here.
Seriously, good.
Yes.
That's what he is.
Yeah, no, he is. I know he is. He's great. And I'm really glad you're on, Steve, because there's a couple of things I want to focus on this hour. I want to talk about Android, and I want to talk specifically around the blind angle of Android, in that the features that are out there that can benefit someone who's blind. Also talk about some of those wonderful features of Android that, you know, differentiate it from iPhone, and, you know, why might you choose one over the other if you're blind. Also, I want to talk to you about specialist tech. It's an area we don't cover a huge amount of in the show, and I want to get into it a bit. I want to know a bit about the kind of products that you sell at Computer Room Services, and, you know, what's popular at the moment, what's hot and what's not. And I'm not talking about me, okay? Don't have to mention me in this. Stick to the product, Steve. So yeah, let's get into all this because, okay, look, Tim, you weren't here last week. You were listening to the show. You heard us talk about Android. You know, it's a, obviously a topic that we don't come up with a lot. We don't discuss it a lot simply because it's something we don't use, right? But when you you think about it, it's nothing to do with the fact it's because it's Android. It's because we made a decision. We went down the route of an ecosystem, and that's the bottom line, really, isn't it? When you look at phones, whether you agree with it, whether you like it or not, you're buying into an ecosystem when you buy a smartphone, aren't you?
That's absolutely right. We've talked about this before, Stephen, that a lot of times it's which one did you dive into first for whatever the reason. Was that because it was a recommendation or because one came out before the other? You know, what was that reason? Doesn't really matter. For me, I've just been using an iPhone for so long. To switch, I could do it and I could train myself to do it and it would probably be fine, but I'm so comfortable with my iPhone and the gestures and the ecosystem, and I'm so deeply invested at this point that it would be very, very difficult, if not almost impossible, to switch for the ecosystem purposes, not for learning the Android or learning TalkBack or anything like that. I think that'd be fantastic. That'd be fine. It's just I'm so heavily invested. On the flip side, people that may have gotten to Android first or switched for whatever reason or needed it for business or whatever, they're just as comfortable. So I don't think there's any right or wrong at this time. That's a big thing for any of us to say at this point, any of us Apple fanboys. But there was a time where I wouldn't have said that. I would have said, you know what? No, even if I wasn't so heavily invested, I can't switch because Android's just not ready yet. It's just not there. It's not as fully baked in as Apple. But I think it's getting close, if not already there. And I know Steve's going to tell us about that. But I'm not as against Android as used to be. Again, not for me because I'm so heavily invested, like I said. But if somebody wants to try it, I think it's a good time to do it.
You're absolutely right, Tim. I was going to say that I think now, and I do have both, by the way, I have Android and iOS, and I use both every day. So I'm actually in both ecosystems quite happily. And it's now a lifestyle choice rather than an accessibility choice. You know how a sighted person goes, I don't like Android, I don't like iPhone because X, Y, Z. A blind person can do exactly the same now and be pretty much in the same position.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Tim really did tee up this discussion well on this point, Steve, because, you know, the key question here is why would you choose one over the other? Where do you stand on this? Because you are using both.
Yeah. And again, let me emphasize that I can't be against Apple because I'm using iOS. In fact, I've just bought an iPhone 12 Pro, and I'm really digging the people detection and things like that. So I'm really into both ecosystems. What I don't like about the iPhone is nothing to do with accessibility. It's simple things like with an Android phone, I can plug it into a computer. I can copy an MP3 over and instantly make it a ringtone. Try that with the iPhone. Doesn't work. You have to use iTunes or you have to put it up in the cloud somewhere and then re-download it and all that stuff. And it's the closedness of iOS that I don't like. It's not the ecosystem. I love the ecosystem and I think they've done a grand job with VoiceOver. Let me put that out there. But it's the actual nanny state thing, like you can't do this, you can't do something simple as copy a file from a computer and it works.
yeah and that's often the big issue, isn't it? I mean, I must admit I never really understood the customization side of Android, and I guess it's because I never had the options on iPhone to try. You know, I just kind of got used to the fact that my ringtone was always going to sound a certain way, or I'd have to spend £1 to buy the same song but as a ringtone. I've never understood that in the iTunes store. It just makes no sense to me that if you want to buy a song and turn it into a ringtone, you've got to buy it again as a ringtone for £1. It's like, what is that about? So, you know, there are lots of things in this, obviously, you can do. I mean, you know, talk me through some of the things that you use your Android for. You've mentioned a couple there, but what do you use it for that you would say you would go to it first over the iPhone?
Well, the other thing I prefer about Android is the Bluetooth, because they use HD audio, which Apple don't. They use what they call ALAC. And ALAC isn't as high quality audio as HD audio, which is what the Bluetooth protocol that Android uses. So again, I find that Android is better in terms of connecting to Bluetooth. I don't like Bluetooth much because it's compressed as soon as you get it. But if you want high quality audio Bluetooth, I think Android's really the only way to go. So audio is one of my hobbies as well. And in that respect, I prefer Android for the audio things. So I have YouTube Music, which is higher quality music, in my view, than iTunes or anything like that. And I have things like Cobbers. And Cobbers works well on iOS. Cobbers, Q-O-B-U-Z, that is. It's a high-end music system. You can go right up to 24-bit, 96, 192K, and so on. But the minute you put that on iPhone in Bluetooth, it's lowered, it's sampled down. With Android, it's not. And there are silly problems with audio with iPhone, like sometimes VoiceOver ducks down the audio and it forgets to bring it back, and little things like that. Again, this is nothing to say that it's all bad on iPhone, but this is just my preference.
Robin, you've been very quiet, and I'm intrigued to know what you're thinking.
No, I mean, I'm just relishing the techiness of this, and I'm so glad that we've got Steve on. audio ducking is glitchy in iOS, and that's why I turn it off. Mm, you know, if it's on for whatever reason on a new device or whatever, that goes off straight away, which, you know, can be problematic because sometimes there is a conflict there, and it would be nice if it did work and it worked reliably. But yeah, you're right. Sometimes it doesn't duck back up again, unduck maybe. So yeah, that's really interesting. I was going to ask at the beginning when Steve said that he uses both on a daily basis, you know, why? You've kind of said why you use iOS. You know, you've got the fantastic features of the LiDAR potentially, you know, in WorldView and that sort of thing, which haven't come to Android yet. But yeah, I'm still intrigued, really. Audio, everyone that listens to this show knows that's, you know, I'm the opposite of an audiophile and all that kind of thing's lost on me. So that's a really good insight. Other things that you are, you know, happier about on Android, I'd love to know. But also, what are your go-tos that you just can't do on Android?
I can't think of anything I can't do on Android that I can do on iPhone, except... And this is really a bugbear, and I've passed it on to Google. Some web views on Android don't view properly. So in other words, I've got an app called Sky Bet because I do the odd little bet on football, and the website is a built-in web view. It's not Chrome itself. They actually use the internal web view. It doesn't work really well at all on Android, but it works really well on iOS. And the reason apparently for that is that the people who developed SkyBet are using an old version of Android's WebView component. So we're waiting for them to update it. So there are one and two little things, little programs, you know, that are more accessible on iPhone than Android. And I'm not proud, you know, if something's more accessible on iPhone, I'm going to pick it up and do it. The other reason I use iPhone on a daily basis is because I train people on iPhone. So I actually train people on iOS as part of my work at Computer Room Services. I do remote training, and I try and train people on gestures as much as I can and things like that. And my wife's also an iPhone user. So because I tend to be kind of head of technical support in the house, I tend to keep up with iPhone.
We're all familiar with that.
And yeah,
the other big reason I keep up with iPhone is because people come and say, well, you can't do this on Android. And, you know, and I come back and say, yeah, but you can't do this on iPhone and so on. But I want to know what I'm talking about. So when I come on to you and say Android is really great, I want to know and prove that Android is really great over iPhone. But I can't do that if I don't know the iPhone system.
I'm intrigued by when you talk about the apps, because as we talk about this, I kind of think to myself, I wonder if we're in a position where the reason that Android and Apple often get pitched against each other, and I'm as guilty of doing it as anyone else, but I think there are differences, and clearly you've got to pick one. I mean, you can't, if you're in a position where you can afford to buy two, that's great. But the reality is you probably want to just pick one, and that's the end of it. It's actually the third-party apps that cause the problems. I always remember when ITV had audio description available on the Android app but not on the iPhone app, and I thought, you know, some people might make a decision to buy a phone on that basis. So in some ways, it's not actually the phone itself that's the problem.
It's these third-party
apps.
I totally agree with you, Steve. And now we're back to it again, because Netflix have got audio control where you can speed up audio on Android but not on iPhone. So we're back to the same kind of thing again. So yes, I think it is a... you know, like Tim said very well, it's a lifestyle choice now rather than an accessibility choice. If your apps work better on the ecosystem that, you know, that you want, then go out and buy it. And, you know, I applaud Apple and Google for doing it. The problem I have is because Apple did it first and they did it best first, and I agree with Tim that 2 years ago I wouldn't have said to anyone that Android was as good as Apple, although I've been using it since 2009, I would say that, you know, now they're up there. It's a lifestyle choice rather than an accessibility choice, and whatever apps you use, if they work best on one particular platform, then go out and get it.
We should let people know that you're visually impaired as well, yourself.
I'm totally blind. Yep.
Yep. And so you definitely know what you're talking about. It was really interesting that you said about Netflix and, you know, Android kind of being ahead of the, you know, of the two being singled out, because it's often the other way around, isn't it? And that's not a flaw in Android. It's the decisions of developers to sometimes prioritize iOS because of, you know, for whatever reason. And, you know, they would potentially, in the case of a web view, say, optimize for WebKit first, which is the Safari one. And sometimes, you know, they would get to the web view in Android secondarily. So, you know, but that's not a reflection of the platform. But do you find that sometimes you will fall foul of the fact that developers, companies out there just prioritize iOS over Android?
Yes. I mean, a prime example of that is Microsoft. I mean, look at Seeing AI and Soundscape. They're still not on Android. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that really annoys me because they're good apps. And why aren't they on? And yet, Microsoft use Android as their primary operating system. If you think of Microsoft Word is on Android and things like that, and Microsoft 365, Office 365 is all over the place, but yet their apps for the visually impaired are not on Android.
Windows Duo is Android?
Yeah, Windows Duo is Android even. You know, so Microsoft are well embedded in the Android ecosystem. It's just the people who develop Seeing AI and Soundscape don't seem to want to do it.
It's interesting you bring that up because I've been thinking about this as well. You know, Microsoft have obviously ditched the whole Windows Phone idea, whether you agree with that or not, but they've decided to go down the route of using Android for their own phones or their own smartphone devices, although you would argue whether or not they are smartphones or not. It's a really interesting time, and you know, we're also seeing a huge leap towards more web-based apps on the Windows side. For example, I was reading just last week, if not the week before, about the Outlook app that will eventually become web-based, and that kind of thing concerns me. And it's interesting, and I know I sound like a big Apple fanboy when I say this, and I am probably, but I worry less about it on the Apple side than I do on the Windows side, and I think that's the interesting place we're at, where, you know, we want the tools that work, but it's how do you decide what is going to work best for you when you come up against all these issues? I suppose you just have to take a leap of faith somewhere, don't you?
Yeah, you do. I mean, the other problem we have, which we haven't really touched on, Steve, is when I started off with an iPhone 3GS, so I started off, I think that was the first iPhone that spoke. So I was in the iPhone ecosystem before Android, and I came to Android because I was excited by the openness of Android in about 2009 and so on. But what I found was, because Apple did it first and they did it very well before Android, before Google caught up, and you know, I always acknowledge that to people, you know, Google did play catch up, organizations grab hold of that and go, well, Apple must be the most accessible because they did it first. And you know, that's since this year, since Android 11, so last year, last October, Android 11, I would honestly say that's no longer true. I mean, you know, we can talk about, if you want the, sorry, we can talk about the multi-finger gestures and things like that, and Braille screen input now, which I believe now have leveled the playing field. So now I think Apple and Android are pretty well equal. I'd say before Android 11.
Oh, no, hang on. That's a very interesting point you raised there. You just jumped right over two things there. One is, of course, the multi-finger gesture, which, come on, how long has it taken for that to come along?
I agree, but
that's ridiculous.
You know, yeah.
But in terms of Braille, still a lot of concern around the, I mean, Braille Back, which is their way of, you know, their Braille screen input option. Yep. And of course, you know, working with those third-party Braille displays, it's still, I mean, from my understanding, it's not been a great experience. Are you saying that that's changed?
Well, I'm using it every day. I find it okay.
And what are you using? Just the Braille screen input, or are you using a separate display?
I use Braille screen input, but I also use various things like the Vario Ultra Braille displays, Eurobraille, Esis Braille displays, which we sell. And I also have tried Focus Braille displays from Freedom Scientific, and they all work fine with Braille Back. And I don't really know what the fuss is. I'd love to talk to somebody who seriously knows Braille to tell me what's wrong with Android Braille. Everyone says, oh, Android Braille is not as good as Apple. At what point is it not good?
So the gauntlet really is down to the listener there, because, you know, I'd be really intrigued to hear what they've got to say on this. And you know, like Steve says, you know, get in touch and tell us if you've had bad experiences with Braille, on Android. Tell us what those were. We'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, I mean, are any of you guys Braillists on here? Can any of you give me a clue as to what's wrong with Android Braille? Because everyone tells me Android Braille is not as good as Apple, but nobody actually comes and says what's wrong with it.
Are you in the wrong, you're in the wrong room here, okay. I'll tell you.
I think to do with the breadth of support. So, you know, the number of devices supported, etc. But yeah, no, you're right. And as Stephen's just alluded to, we're newbies when it comes to Braille. We're enthusiastic, but...
Robin's shocking.
I've got my Braille display here.
Yeah, well, all the devices I've tried it on are supported.
Brilliant. So, yeah, I mean, wouldn't it be great if that was confirmed by the listeners as well, and we can say that they're both on par now?
That's really important, though, because, you know, I don't want myths flying around about this, you know, and that's the thing. If we can get past this nonsense that, you know, I mean, it's like people talk about TalkBack and saying, well, you know, it's not as fully fledged as Apple. I think it must be at that level now. I think that TalkBack, especially now adding those multi-finger gestures. I mean, Tim, you know, you're an Apple guy, of course. You've been using it for a long time. You mentioned earlier about some of these things actually piquing your interest a little bit in, you know, maybe not necessarily making the leap to it, but at least knowing a bit more about it and actually be able to recommend it to others.
Absolutely. And before I even answer that, just for housekeeping purposes, Steve had mentioned that Netflix doesn't have the speed control on iOS. I don't know if they just recently added it or not, but I checked while you guys were talking, and it is actually there now. So it must have been a very recent update.
Oh, excellent. I do apologize.
So to put that aside. But no, you're absolutely right, Stephen. Let's think of it this way. I just recently, as you guys know, we just had to buy a new television. And based on, you know, recommendations that, you know, we've talked about in the past and what you guys have done and what I've read, I went with a Samsung Series 8 television because I knew that the built-in screen reader, I mean, it's not the best sounding voice, but it gets the job done and I can use it very accessibly. We had it break within the first month and had to send it back. And my wife said, if this next one that we get doesn't work, I'm not getting another Samsung TV. I'm putting my foot down. And I'm like, all right, let me look at which other ones are accessible. And I knew what models those were. And I had choice. I could say going into a brand new smart TV that we hadn't, you know, been invested in yet, I knew that, okay, if we don't do Samsung, we have other options. The same is now, I think, the same way for Apple and Android. If you're coming to it fresh or you're not as invested like we are and you're open to the idea of it, I think that this is a good time, like Steve was talking about, you know, a couple of years ago, as we all said, this wouldn't have been the case. But now with multi-finger gestures and the Braille screen input or, you know, Braille, you know, availability, it is catching up or has maybe caught up. I wouldn't still make the switch because, as I said before, I'm still just that invested. But I wouldn't be opposed to picking up an Android phone and trying to use it or to show somebody how it works or to recommend to somebody, hey, if you're, for whatever reason, not interested in Apple, you know, try the Android. My question to Steve on that would be, we've talked about these multi-finger gestures they've added in their number 11 operating system. What, if any, is the same or different? Like when you pick up an iPhone as opposed to an Android now, with multi-finger gestures, does it feel the same? Is there kind of a standard or is it totally different?
All of the multi-finger gestures are totally customizable on Android. So you can turn them on and off. So if you want to turn them off and stick to the original Android gestures, you can do that. If you turn them on, then you can set two, three, and four finger gestures, up, down, left, right, double tap, triple tap, quad tap, and you can do whatever you like with those. And you can duplicate as well. So if you want to stick with if you want the multi fingers, but you still want to use the odd single finger gesture because Android supports it, you can use both methods of doing the same thing. And so now by default, the magic tap is there. The old magic tap, you know, the two finger double tap for answering the phone and pausing and various things like that. To be totally frank with you, it's better than iPhones because sometimes the double tap, double finger gets confused. For example, if somebody hangs up before you do and you double tap with two fingers, it will start playing your music. You don't get that on Android. It just works. So they've actually done something a bit better than Apple, I'd say, on that one, especially as all of the gestures are completely customizable.
So if you were asked by somebody who had – budget for either iOS or Android was non-sighted, no vision at all, so they would be relying on a screen reader, what would you recommend?
I would say I'd try and find out what they want to do, you know, what apps they want to use, various things like that, because it's not a simple answer anymore. You know, I never ever say to someone, oh, go and buy Android because, or go and buy iPhone because. I think that's a mistake. First of all, I say, what do you want to do? If they say to me, oh, I want to be able to copy my MP3s and make ringtones, then immediately I'll say, well, buy an iPhone, an Android, because you can't do that with iPhone. On the other hand, if they say, I want something like Soundscape, there is no app that I know of that is anywhere close to Soundscape on Android. So I would say, go and buy an iPhone. And so I try and dig down and find out what they want to do.
I mean, that's the challenge, isn't it? It's trying to find out what people are likely to do. Budget comes into a lot as well, Steve. People often say, well, you know, to buy into the Apple ecosystem costs a huge amount of money. I'm not so sure how true that is these days when you've got phones like the iPhone SE. But, you know, obviously, you know, for some people, £400 or £500 is still a lot of money. What do you recommend on the Android side that's low end? We had this bit of this conversation last week, but I'm intrigued in your take on it. What is good at the low end? Say sub £400 that will work well with, say, TalkBack and even magnification if needed?
I think that Samsung have just bought out the A4100. Don't quote me on this, but I actually heard it on a podcast called Phone Show Chat, I think it was last week. Samsung have just bought out the A4100 and it's 180 quid. And that will work well with TalkBack because Samsung are now working with Google. In fact, they're ditching their own screen reader for Android 11 now that Samsung have, now that TalkBack have got multi-finger gestures. So now Samsung are working hard with Google to make TalkBack even better.
It's very interesting, isn't it, to see the developments come along. So that's really interesting to find out about that, because a lot of people do ask that question. I get it a lot, and I know others do here as well. You know, we get asked the question, well, you know, what is at the low end? And, you know, we often focus, and I certainly focus my aspirations on the high end, because we all know that if you buy a Google Pixel device or you buy one of the Samsung devices, you're going to get a really good experience. The other brands, we're never too sure about it, because I think you would even agree, and I wonder if you do agree on this, you know, that vanilla Android is the way you want to go, which means basically the raw stock Android that you get on, say, a Google Pixel, for example.
Yeah, I would agree to a point, Steve, but it's getting less and less important now because, for example, I've had experience or been looking at the Sony Xperia 5 Mark II. And the reason that interests me is because it's really, really good audio device. It's a phone, but it's also really, really good. It's got really good DACs in it, you know, audio DACs. And so, you know, it does wired headphones, Bluetooth headphones, high-end audio, really high-end audio. And I've been looking at that. And although it's fairly custom, in other words, Sony have their own launcher on it. If you put another launcher on it called Custom Pixel Launcher, you can make it look exactly like stock Android. So it's getting less and less. In other words, manufacturers' skins are getting lighter and lighter now. Google are tightening up on this. They're making sure that all the stock apps are installed. So now if you buy a Sony phone or a Samsung phone or any phone, by and large, the TalkBack screen reader is built in. So you don't have to download it, install it. You can turn it on without sight just by holding the volume keys down.
I have a question. If the screen readers on both platforms are converging and they're, you know, getting to a point where it's difficult to sort of justify one over the other, they're both very sophisticated, is your experience that the everyday apps that people would like to use on the different platforms, so not specialist, you know, just whether it's Netflix or a, you know, podcast app or weather app, news app, whatever it might be, obviously, Android and iOS have different building blocks, different developer tools. Is the resulting third-party app experience equivalent, or is one slightly better than the other, more reliable, more consistent, etc.?
In most cases, it's pretty much the same. And what I'd say, you know, in same kind of accessibility. So if they haven't labelled a button on iOS, they haven't labelled a button on Android, if you see what I mean. So it's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Because what they're using now is they're using programming code like Flutter, which means that you can port the same app to both platforms. So you can use the same building blocks on both platforms, iOS and Android, just using one program code. And what that means is that the apps look very, very similar in the way they work. And they're also very similar in terms of accessibility. So if a vendor does it badly on one, they usually do it badly on another, with the exception of people who use weird web views like the Skybet that I mentioned, which is better on iOS than on Android, although Google have told me why that is, and I've told the developer why that is, so hopefully they'll get that fixed.
Oh, you just need to give up betting, to be honest, Stephen.
Well, yeah,
I wouldn't put money on it.
Or I could use other betting apps, which which I know is there. But it's just a bit of fun I have. But the point is, yeah, the apps now look the same, and the gestures are very samey. You know, you can flick left, flick right, double tap, triple tap, double tap two fingers, triple tap nine fingers if you want, you know, things like that. You know, they all look very much of a muchness. I don't even know if, for example, I installed, if I didn't know the models, you know, if I didn't know how it felt and I didn't know which was an Android or an iPhone in my hand, I'm not even sure. It'd be quite hard to tell the difference, especially if it had the same nuanced voices on it, you know, like Daniel and Serena and things like that, which you can get on Android. And that's another thing I want to say about Android. You can get more voices for Android than iOS. iOS doesn't allow for third-party voices. So you can't have a cappella, you can't have eloquence, you can't have, you know, other voices than nuance for your main voiceover voice. And that's another restriction I don't like in iOS, and that's another reason I use Android.
A cappella, of course, those who don't know, is Italian for "Where's the band?"
Oh, nice. And if you download apps that are self-voicing in iOS, you're downloading often the same voice engines multiple times because those apps keep hold of them. They don't share them, like you were saying, is the way of Android. So that can be quite, you know, frustrating.
Yeah,
as
even
well.
Voice Dream Reader does that, doesn't it? So if you, you know, when you install Voice Dream Reader, the first thing it wants you to do is download a voice. So you have to download it again.
Whereas Android shares them across the across the system.
So Android lets you use any voices that anyone wants to develop system-wide, but iOS doesn't. And that's another restriction that I didn't like, because I like eloquence, although I understand eloquence is going away on Android because Code Factory don't want to support 64-bit programs. So
which brings me to the question of security, because, you know, the fact it's both a strength and a weakness of iOS, you know, that non-sharing of different program elements is to do with security, ostensibly. So do you have any qualms with Android and, you know, the Google overlords and generally what they're collecting about you, etc.?
You've got to trust someone, haven't you? You know, like Tim said, he's in the Apple ecosystem, so you've got to give your information to Apple. If I'm in the Google ecosystem, I've got to give my information to Google. So you've got to trust some one of these big tech companies if you're going to be in either of their ecosystems. And because Google have got things like Play Protect now, I believe they're taking security very seriously. So every time you install an app, it's scanned by Play Protect. Even if you sideload it, it's scanned by Play Protect, and it'll stop you. I've had apps stopped before in their tracks, you know, where Google have said, well, this is not secure, we're not going to let you install it. So yeah, I'm personally quite happy with Google security, and because they bring out a security patch every month they bring out a security patch, and they insist that Android developers stick to those security patches where they can, I'm pretty happy.
Tim, did you want to come in at some point on that?
Yeah, I have a question. Actually, it goes back to something that Steve said quite a bit back, but I was just enjoying you guys talking about this, so I didn't want to push too far, but or push in too much, I should say. Yeah, Steve, you had mentioned before about the differences between Android and Apple apps and the third-party app, you know, ecosystem, and not having labeled buttons because of how they're just pushing the code to each phone and all that. I can just hear our listeners that are Apple fanboys going, okay, ask him this question because Apple can do this, so can Android do it too. With Android, can you navigate those apps with something built into Android, like being able to label a button or navigate in a different way? Some of the updates that we had in iOS 14 where you can either have the graphic described to you or you can label a button or a graphic or get it to read differently so that you can get a different view. Does okay. Android have anything like that?
Yes. So there's good news and bad news on this. The bad news is that at the moment, Android won't describe to you a graphic on the screen. You know, when you go over a graphic with iOS, it describes it. Sometimes gets it totally wrong. It just says outdoors and kinds of things like that. But it describes it on the screen. Android has nothing like that. However, it does have labeling buttons. So, you know, if you move to an unlabeled button and it's not labeled, you can label it. Now, the even better news, and this you can't do this with iOS, is that once you've labeled those buttons, you can share those buttons with another Android device. So let's say, Tim, you've got an app and I've got the same app and I get Sighted Assistance and I get all the buttons labeled up and I say, hey, Tim, would you like this app to work now? I can literally ping a file at you and you can import it into TalkBack and all your buttons are labeled.
I do like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah, that is nice.
That is nice.
Apple, you're listening?
Talk back about that for years.
Mr. Cook?
Yeah, come on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's shouting out for a central resource that all TalkBack users would get automatically to me. But anyway, yeah, brilliant idea.
Yeah, it is. Really is. That's a good idea as well. Be nice to get some of this, you know, these features working together more, wouldn't it? But yeah. Anyway, look, we could talk more about this all day. I'm really intrigued by what you've been talking about today on the show, Steve. This is fascinating. Staying on the Android theme.
News from the internet.
And you kind of alluded to this earlier, Steve, when you mentioned Samsung getting out of the screen reader market. Yeah, for a while, Samsung came with its own built-in screen reader, as you were saying. They have now decided to ditch that and actually are working more closely with Google to develop TalkBack. And the new features of TalkBack, these multi-finger gestures and all kinds of other Braille-related features are actually coming to Samsung first, which I find rather interesting. We'll see what that means. But all Android users will get this functionality, but it starts with Samsung, possibly because of the relationship and the fact they're now working together as opposed to separately. That's very interesting. You know, the idea of having two screen readers when you only need one, I don't know, just seems a bit odd. The other story I wanted to mention briefly is Apple's Time to Walk feature. Have you heard about this? This is interesting. So Apple Fitness Plus is Apple's way of getting us all fit for money. And what they've done is they've developed this Time to Walk feature. So if you are going out for a wander, you can put your earbuds in. All you need is your AirPods, and your Apple Watch. And you can head out for a walk and listen to nice stories. Dolly Parton, Shawn Mendes, there are NBA soccer players, if that is soccer. It's not, it's basketball, which is why I know it's sport. But yeah, basically, famous people are being talked to in this podcast. And you can listen to it exclusively through Apple Fitness Plus. You get some music, you get nice soundscapes to walk along to. Great for the treadmill, even at home. But certainly an interesting feature. And of course, it's all part of the Apple Fitness Plus service, which you do have to pay for. But once you've got it, you would get access to that via the Apple Watch only. But you have to update to iOS 14.4, which actually, I just want to add, there are a lot of stories of issues with Braille displays. These issues seem to be getting rectified. In particular, the word is coming from APH, American Printing House for the Blind, in the States, which would affect us here in the UK through HumanWare. So any HumanWare Braille displays are not talking very well at the minute to Apple's devices on iOS 14.4. So if you have updated, you might want to be aware of that. If you haven't, you might want to wait. Those using Focus displays, though, seem to be okay. So it does seem to be a minor issue that is being resolved. And no doubt by the time we're talking again next week, this will be resolved. But you do have to get iOS 14.4 to get the new Time to Walk feature. And you also have to make sure that your Apple Watch is on WatchOS 7.3. Right, look, we're going to get back to Steve in a minute because he's going to talk to us about specialist tech and how it fits into today's society. You know, we talk a lot about the mainstream stuff, but there's a lot of specialist tech out there people still want. So what is it and what is popular? We'll hear what's hot and what's not. Coming up with Steve a bit later. But first, let's turn to Yvonne Brooks from RNIB's Technology for Life team to tell us all about the LiDAR scanner found inside our iPhones.
Today, I'm going to talk about LiDAR, what it is and how it can be used. LiDAR stands for Light Detection and Ranging, and it is a remote sensing method that uses light in the form of a pulsed laser to measure ranges. It's not new, it's been around since the 1960s, when laser scanners were used mounted to aeroplanes. But while the iPhone 12's A14 Bionic processor offers good support for Apple's LiDAR scanner, there's plenty of room for improvement in the scanner itself too. This means the LiDAR scanner in the Apple devices is designed more for room-scale applications like games or shifting around AR furniture in IKEA's PlaceApp. It doesn't currently let you 3D scan objects with greater accuracy than other techniques like photogrammetry, which instead combines high-resolution RGB photos taken from different vantage points. For those of you who don't know the IKEA Place app, it allows you to place items from their range in your room, so you can see how they fit and whether the colour and style are what you want. However, it relies on sight, so it's not very accessible. Some of you may have heard of the BBC demo on their technology programme Click, where a visually impaired young lady goes out with a cane and her friend and uses the phone to identify people and objects. It was this clip that made me want to investigate it for myself. Initially, I found it very difficult to find out how to do anything using the LiDAR on the iPhone. But in the end, I discovered that if you turned on the magnifier that is, not zoom, then there is a people detection button, which you can turn on by double tapping. Now, if you hold the phone up, you will detect any people in the camera's view that are within a maximum distance of 5 meters. I found disappointingly that I had to tap the bottom of the screen for the phone to announce the distance, but I can imagine it would be useful in a queuing situation to maintain a 2 meter socially distanced gap. I am less convinced about using it as you move along. For example, I don't think it's safe to encourage visually impaired people to walk along with their valuable phones held out in front of them. I also wonder if it might produce bad reactions for people who think you are taking their picture. Ironically, because of the current lockdown, I had very limited options for testing this, but my very kind cleaning lady put up with me approaching her and retreating and getting the distances read out. The second use that I found is a beta feature, i.e. one that is in development, in the Seeing AI app. This is an added channel called World at the right end of the list of channels after brightness. With this selected, if you move the camera around, it will identify what it can. I found it good at finding doors, though they had to be shut, windows, screens, books and bottles, but less good at finding computer mice, keyboard and seats, and unable to find phones, keys, etc. I can see how this feature could be useful to find a door to a room in an unknown place, but it will be no use to avoid objects. I am sure that these features will improve over time, and it gives an inkling of what could be done. So in conclusion, is it worth getting the new iPhone from the point of view of LiDAR? I would have said not, but I think it is a tantalising insight into what is going to be possible in the not too distant future.
Thank you to Yvonne Brooks from RNIB's Technology for Life team bringing us the news about LiDAR, how it works, and how it actually operates with specific features on the iPhone 12 Pro, mentioning, of course, people detection and seeing AI, but also, you know, giving some rather interesting comments there. Do you agree? Do you disagree with that? Have you tried it? Do you love it? Do you hate it? Tell us your thoughts. Email techtalk@rnib.com. www.ipod.org.uk. As always, time is upon us, and I want to get back to Steve Nutt from Computer Room Services, who's with us this week, along with myself, Robin and Tim. We're having a chat about specialist tech now. Steve, you know, it's really interesting when we don't touch on this topic enough, I don't think. But I am intrigued to know from your perspective, as someone who sells specialist technology as well as mainstream tech that you've curated for your store, what's hot, what's not in the world of specialist tech?
I don't really know that there's any particular app that's really hot. I mean, for example, specialist tech that's hot. We sell one thing that is going well at the moment. We sell a talking battery charger. Now, that, I know that sounds boring, really, but basically it's a battery charger. You can put four batteries in it, triple A's, double A's, whatever. It tells you which slots are charging, which slots are not charging, when they're fully charged, when the battery's, you know, it gives you all kinds of information. And it's from CareTech, a company called CareTech in Austria. And I haven't got any batteries at the moment in it, but it says
all slots are empty.
So there you can hear it. It says all slots are empty. So it speaks in a human voice, and people seem to like that. It's also got a USB plug socket in the side, so you can plug your mobile phone into it and charge it as well. It won't tell you when your phone is charged, but it will charge it as well. But that's one that's going really well. At the moment, I've had some good success with Braille displays. We've just started selling the Vario Ultra Braille displays from what used to be Baum, and they're now Vizio Braille. And although they're expensive, they're the Rolls Royce of Braille displays. And that's how I know that Android works well with Braille, by the way, because I have to support those as well as use them for myself. And, you know, that kind of thing is really good. And then we sell really cheap things like a simple voice recorder called MicroSpeak, which is under 40 quid. You know, it's £39.95. And it just allows people to record continuously, you know, up to 48 hours of recordings. There's no folders as such. I mean, you can back it up onto a computer. It records into small little files. But there's, you know, just hit record, speak, turn it off, and you can wind it back and forward and delete files. And it's only got three buttons on it. And some people just love that, you know. It's not really specialist, but people like it. So that's down the really cheaper end of the stuff. There's about 180 products on our website. Some of them are specialists, some of them are not. You know, we sell wireless battery chargers and things like that, all kinds of tech that I dig, you know, tech that I think really works well for blind people.
Yeah, you personally look after the stock that comes in, don't you? You look at the products, you test them, you make sure that they're work. Because that's the challenge, isn't it? That you've got to know that this is going to work. You know, not being funny about it, but, you know, if a sighted person was doing it, you know, it might not work because they might miss things that you would immediately pick up on.
That's right. I mean, I've heard demos of tech for the blind done by sighted people really badly because they're sighted and because they're not using it in the same way that we blind people are using it, you know, not naming names or anybody like that, but I've seen some really bad demos at exhibitions.
Oh, yeah. I saw a video once of a guy demoing a Braille display, and he said, now, if you look here...
yeah, what?
If you're using a Braille display, you're not looking anywhere. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And the other thing is where you get display, you know, companies displaying things to a script, you know, so somebody's written down to them what form, what they should show, and, you know, and if somebody goes off script and asks a question they don't know the answer to, like, you know, does your Braille display support German Braille code or something like that, you know, and you know, hang on, I've got to ask someone else type of thing, you know. I try and learn that before I sell anything so that I can do it myself as a blind consumer as well as a blind, you know, business owner.
What was that was beeping?
Sorry, it's my watch.
Oh, yeah. So, actually, that's a point as well. I mean, talking watches and Braille watches, I guess, as well. Are those still as popular as ever? I mean, I'm thinking, obviously, not everyone can afford an Apple Watch.
No, and we didn't even get onto Android watches, did we? Which are accessible, by the way. My watch is an Android Wear watch.
Well, you say that. You say that. It is accessible, yes. Yep. My own experience of it was I would have been quite happy to throw it against the nearest wall.
Yeah, but you'd
5 minutes
say that about an Android phone,
it.
Wouldn't you?
Well, not anymore. I mean, not anymore. I wouldn't actually, no.
There's my watch.
1700. 0. 1609 steps. 112.
That's
1609 steps.
Yeah, the 1609 steps. That's why. So the watch is accessible. I can do different watch faces. I can get all my fitness, my blood oxygen, all that kind of stuff.
What watch have you got?
I've got the Mobvoi Tick Watch Pro 2020, and it's a beautiful watch. It's a very nice watch. It looks fairly analog, people tell me. It's almost round. It's not quite round. It's almost like a 50p piece to look at. But I can open my calendars. I can do my notifications. I can speak to it. I can do the Hey G lady with it. And I can get all my assistants on my wrist. The other cool thing I can do, like the Apple Watch, is I can pause my Android Chromecast from my watch. That means when I'm playing podcasts, I can just pause it on my watch and so on like that. Android watches, and I mean, and yes, we've got Apple Watch in the house as well. Android Watch is just as accessible as an Apple Watch.
Wow.
Yep.
It's quite a statement. I will say that's far more responsive than the one I tried. I think the one I tried was a Fossil.
Yeah.
I had Wear OS on it.
Yeah, it was a Fossil. We won't go into that story of how you bought that.
Fossil's got a 2100 chip in it, which is pretty slow. The Mobvoi has got the new 4100 chip, which is lightning fast. And
I'll tell you something, the Fossil had the right name. I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
it had
certainly
the right name because it was a Fossil when I got it. It was terrible.
I can, just to illustrate a point here, I can press a button on the side of my watch and we'll open.
Choose workout.
So I'm now in Google Fit, so I can choose my works out. So let's see.
Cycling, treadmill running.
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Elliptical. Strength training.
It's pretty impressive, isn't it? And that's all on my watch.
1702.
That's definitely better than your Fossil
list.
Can I tell you, I'm now feeling like I want to burst into tears.
I had a Fossil watch and I got rid of it and I got the Mobvoi. And the Mobvoi is the best watches on the market in my view. They're really accessible. Mobvoi are a great support team to work with. And all their apps, generally, all their apps except one are accessible, and I'm just trying to get them to fix that.
Is that, you're saying the apps, this is one of the other things I noticed with the Fossil that had an issue. A few people have told me, other ones like the Samsung as well, they have the issues. I know Samsung work off a slightly different system though, don't they? It's not
Tizen, yeah.
It's Tizen, so it's not true Android, that sense. But a lot of people talk about the issues with the third-party apps again. And this has always been the thing I've heard about Android. Maybe less so now on the phone side, for sure. I think you're absolutely right. I think that the Android experience on the phone level is almost, if not exactly the same. It may be just a few differences here or there. Different options, obviously, like we've talked about in terms of customization. But in terms of the watch, how are third-party apps behaving on it?
So they are like Android, like iOS. They are yes or no. In other words, if the developer is going to make them accessible, they are. If they're not, they're not. So some apps are accessible and some are not, and you can't guarantee accessibility. But the actual apps on the watch themselves are accessible. Google Fit is accessible on the watch. So Google Fit links to my phone. It links to my watch. So my watch sends my heart rate to the phone and the phone sends it up into the cloud. And so I've got the heart rate on my watch face on my screen, so I can see it. And that's one thing I noticed, that with iOS, with Apple Watch, in some watch faces, you can't put your heart rate on your home screen. It will say heart rate, and then you have to tap into it to see it. But mine, I've actually got the heart rate directly on the home screen, so I can see it as it's, live as it's updated. And again, it's whatever you like. I'm sure there are some inaccessible Apple Watch apps as well.
Oh, there are. There are good for you.
But Android Watch, again, I would say is now as good as Apple Watch. My wife has got Apple Watch, so I do keep an eye on it in terms of accessibility. And the one thing I want from the Apple Watch, which I can't have, is the Minnie Mouse watch face and the Mickey Mouse. Because they tell the time as well. That's quite cool.
Robin, Tim, I've got to ask you. I've got to ask you both here about this, because you've got the Apple Watch, obviously, as do I. I'm listening to Steve try out this watch, and I'm pretty staggered at that experience. That's better than I was expecting.
I mean, I think it's a significant data point that you, Steve, use both iOS and Android on a daily basis, and you've got an Android watch on your wrist, not an Apple watch. Whether that's to do with budget or whatever, I mean, until relatively recently, the voiceover on the watch wasn't responsive enough. So, you know, if people have had early experiences of WatchOS, then...
And that's true on Android too, Robin.
Absolutely.
That's true on Android too. And, but that's why I said that the Fossil is not as nice an experience as the MobVoi watch. But, yeah, I mean, I prefer Android Watch. There are things it does that I don't see an easy way to do on Apple Watch. For example, auto-speaking of notifications, I can't get it to do that, which I can do easily on Android by turning on TalkBack's speak when screen is off, you see. Because TalkBack is literally mirrored on an Android watch, whereas VoiceOver is not on an iPhone watch.
It's a slightly different version. Yeah. I mean, I think it was a top tip what you said about these complications on Apple Watch faces. They do display different amounts of information depending on which watch face and on which part of the watch face. You know, the middle complication on modular, for example, will give you a lot more information than if you put that same widget, as it were, in, say, the bottom left corner, which would just say heart. It wouldn't say the actual heart rate, for example. So, yeah, that's a good point too. We should also flag that variability between Android Wear watches, for example, and how responsive they are is true for Android phones as well.
Yeah.
You know, depending on how much you pay, the manufacturer, what would be your top tip for a good, entry level or
for an Android phone, I'd say definitely go for a Pixel 4a, which is only £399. I say only. I know there's a Samsung watch for Samsung phone for £180, but the Pixel is going to give you pure Google. No bells, no whistles, no extra bloatware, no extra apps like Samsung Internet as well as Chrome and things like that. You're just going to get the Google experience, and it's just like having the Apple experience, if that makes sense.
Steve, it's been really, really interesting having you on. I think I've enjoyed this show more than most for a long time, actually, mainly because of the fact I'm learning so much here. I've came in here with the expectation of getting to the end of this and saying, ha, yeah, well, you know, Steve goes on about how great Android is, but actually it's terrible. And I've come out thinking, you know what? This is actually pretty good. I mean, would it be enough for me to switch? Probably not. And I'm just going to say that out loud because, you know what, I've bought into the ecosystem and I've spent so much money and I think I've signed so many iTunes agreements that I can't get out. I don't think there is actually a way to get out.
Let me just say, Steve, I don't want you to switch. I don't want anyone to switch, not if they don't want to switch. What I want is for us to be honest in the blind community and say that accessibility is just as well on Android as iPhone, but there are differences.
I think you set the tone of the conversation for the next year for us on that one, Steve. Really appreciate that. Now, that's a really important message to give. And I think that as we are into 2021, we're at a point we can all agree on that.
And if Google does feel short, please don't bash them, encourage them. Eh?
Listen, Steve, if people want to get in touch with you and get some advice from you, obviously you've got products for sale as well. How do they do that?
So you can ring me the old-fashioned way on 01438 742286. You can visit www.comproom.co.uk. That's C-O-M for Mike, P for Papa, R-O-O-M.co.uk. Or you can hit me on Twitter at TalkingDroid, or my company on Twitter is at Comproom_co_UK.
Steve, thanks so much for coming on this week.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And next week, we'll be joined by David Ward, the host of the Echo Tips podcast, to tell us how we can use our Amazon Echoes better. In the meantime, Tim Schwartz, Robin Christofferson, thank you.
Thanks all.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Thank you very much.
Catch you next time.